This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. The Indonesian gamelan was introduced to the Western music world at the 1889 Paris Universal Exhibition, and it caused a sensation. New sounds, new timbres, new scales, and even new notions of time made a huge impression on composers like Claude Debussy and Erik Satie, who incorporated gamelan-like sounds into some of their compositions. 40 years later, Benjamin Britten was introduced to gamelan music by the Canadian composer Colin McPhee, who just spent 2 years in Bali and was the West's leading authority on gamelan music. At first, Britten was unimpressed, but in 1956, he and his partner, the tenor Peter Pears, visited Bali as part of a four-month world tour. Britten had recently been commissioned by the great choreographer John Cranko to write a ballet based on the Asian-themed fairy tale The Green Serpent, and Britten knew immediately what it had to sound like. The Green Serpent was actually written by a 17th century French countess, and even though it's set in what was then considered exotic Asia, the story is a combination of the very Western tales of Beauty and the Beast, Cinderella, and King Lear. An old emperor has a good daughter, Belle Rose, and a wicked one, Belle Thorne. Belle Thorne claims the throne for herself. She is then courted by four kings, but turns them all down. The Prince of the Pagodas appears in a dream to the humiliated Belle Rose, and a company of frogs magically transports her to Pagoda Land. After being blindfolded, she dances with a green salamander who turns out to be the prince in disguise. They travel back to Belle Rose's land, where Belle Thorne gets her comeuppance. The emperor is restored to his proper dignity and station, and his fool joins the prince's and Belle Rose's hands in marriage. John Cranko had worked with Britten before. He'd choreographed the dances in Britten's 1953 opera Gloriana. But other than that, the composer had never written music for a ballet, so he must have enjoyed the challenge of trying something new. But the actual composition process did not go smoothly, and the premiere had to be postponed twice. It was a moderate success, but it has never really ranked among Britten's most popular scores, perhaps because it sounds like nothing else he ever wrote. The suite from The Prince of the Pagodas begins with the fanfares from the ballet's prelude. Followed by the variations for Belle Thorne's Four Royal Suitors. The King of the North presents himself in a vigorous Russian hopak. The music for the King of the East is very mysterious sounding. Quiet trills and tremolos in the strings, a high solo for muted horn, and a haunting melody played by the oboe and violins high up on their lowest string. The King of the West gets a spiky sort of music that some writers have called a parody of the 12-tone pieces that Igor Stravinsky was writing. The variation for The King of the South also sounds like Stravinsky. But it's the exuberant Stravinsky of The Rite of Spring. Most of this suite comes from the ballet's second act, which begins with the strange journey of Belle Rose to Pagoda Land. Part of the strangeness lies in the fact that she is carried by frogs, with the music hopping along appropriately. The suite leaves out Belle Rose's encounters with creatures from heaven and sea, but goes straight to the dream pas de deux. In the dream, she's threatened by flames, one male and one female. And it concludes with a coda for a whole chorus of flames. The arrival and adventures of Belle Rose in the Kingdom of the Pagodas is where the music really shows the influence of Indonesia. A series of expressive violin solos is punctuated by the chiming of Britain's pseudo-gamelan, as he says the pagodas revolve like merry-go-rounds. The opening fanfares return to announce the arrival of the great salamander. The princess and the salamander begin their dance in music that Britain's direction says should be slow and smooth. And during a grand crescendo, the handsome prince emerges from his green skin. Prince and princess dance a rich pas de deux. Which is followed by a game of hiding, chasing, and the assuming and shedding of disguises. In the scenes that close Act Two of the ballet. Act Three begins as the prince and princess have exchanged their first kiss, and the inhabitants of Pagoda Land are liberated, although it's not entirely clear from what. The music portrays the lover's passage from darkness to delight in a beautiful slow movement with more gamelan sounds. The impending happy ending is celebrated in a series of characteristic dances. Britten had fallen in love with the Nutcracker, and these final scenes parallel Tchaikovsky's character dances. There's a sprightly pas de six, a broad and richly expressive pas de deux, and a flowing pas de trois in an unusual 7-beat rhythm. The finale is a buoyant waltz. With the notion of waltz wittily stretched almost beyond recognition. We even get a glimpse of the Emperor, played by the tuba, and his fool in the fluttering woodwinds and percussion. The waltz returns in grand Tchaikovsky fashion. And the opening fanfares signal the apotheosis. But the last word belongs to the fool. The gamelans of Indonesia are elaborate constructs of percussion, sometimes with elements of strings and winds, but each one has its own characteristics that make it sound like nothing else. In a remarkable synthesis of East and West, and using instruments that can be found in any standard orchestra, Benjamin Britten built a musical world for the Prince of the Pagodas that also sounds like nothing else. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.